Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:48 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is October 9th. And today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. If we have a review of what's been happening this week, then it has been really quite eventful. And President Obama was re-elected and the status quo was maintained in both houses. And that has initiated quite a steep decline on stock markets as investors move on to worry about the fiscal cliff. And that has resulted in sharp pullbacks right across North America, South America, and Europe. And the Nikkei has pulled back from 9,000, the Hang Seng from 22,000, the ASX from 4,500. And mean reversion is evident for the majority of markets in Asia, whereas in Europe, it's quite a similar story, and we saw really quite deep downward dynamics posted by both the FTSE and the DAX this week. And the Dow Jones pulled back sharply, and the S&P pulled back below 1400, and that was the first area of potential support, and it has now pulled back below the 200-day moving average, and so has the NASDAQ. And that's a rather large pullback. And Apple, which has been a totem for sentiment, has pulled back and is now testing the May low. And someone this week referred to Apple as being in a bear market because it has pulled back by more than 20%. And I think it's approximately $170 from the $700 peak. And this has been a highly emotional response to the election result. And it is interesting that President Obama has been making conciliatory tones and conciliatory sounds toward the Republican Party. And in his speech following his victory, he made specific reference to reaching across the political divide. And John Boehner has said the same thing. Nobody wants to see the US move into a recession. And the majority expect that if the fiscal cliff occurs and that taxes rise and the various Bush tax cuts and Obama's own payroll measures are allowed to expire, that the US will move into a recession and that hundreds of thousands of people will lose their jobs. And we have to be aware that that's a potential problem. But focusing on the problem is rarely the best way to approach the market. We have to be cognizant of what the problems are. And we have to be aware of exactly the challenges that are represented by what's happening in the stock market at present. And if I summarize what those are, people are afraid there is going to be a US recession. And the fact that valuations had advanced into the October peak has got people thinking that the equity market was a bit too expensive. And there is also the fact that people are worried. And they're worried primarily that any of the paper profits that they have been able to accrue in the stock market over the last few years are going to be subject to approximately a 50% additional capital gains tax on the 1st of January. And there's certainly been a certain amount of discretion is the better part of valor this week, and people have been taking those profits and paying the lower capital gains tax on them, rather than potentially taking them later and having to pay substantially more. And this was even something that people were talking about in the San Francisco seminar, or chart seminar, back in April as a potential outcome. So we're definitely starting to see some of that forced selling. And it's really now a question of exactly what the solution is likely to be. One can hope that a simplification of the tax code is going to be somewhere in the pipeline, but that could well be a pipe dream. But what we can rely on is that politicians are bureaucrats, and bureaucrats above all else are interested in protecting their positions. And if it is deemed that the US moves into a recession and that upwards of 1 million people lose their jobs because politicians can't do their job and agree on policy to pull the economy out of its troubles, then there is going to be a massive backlash against the political class. And one can anticipate that they will avoid that at all costs. And if that's the case, then we're going to see some form of accommodation reached before the Bush tax cuts expire. And it is interesting that the yield curve spread, which has predicted every US recession for more than 30 years, has not inverted. And that is noteworthy, because what we've seen with that spread over the last 30 years is that when it inverts, it's usually a lead indicator for recessions. In fact, it's been a lead indicator for recessions since at least 1980. And the spread is currently at 135 basis points. And while it looks like it is coming lower, it's still a long way from zero. And then it also is worth mentioning that when it is a lead indicator, it's a lead indicator for recessions for a minimum of 6 months and often upwards of 18 months. So anticipating that we're going to have a recession in the first quarter of next year, it's certainly not being indicated by perhaps one of the most reliable indicators of recessions that we have. And that would bolster the argument that some form of accommodation is going to be reached. And if the tax cuts are not allowed to expire, then the expectations are that the US economy will grow by about 2% next year and 3% the year after. And that would be a positive outcome. So this is a highly uncertain environment, but we know what the potential solution may be. And if that potential solution goes from being a pipe dream to being talked about and starts to become remotely credible, then the speed with which markets and the emotional response that people have had to the election result will look like an overreaction, and we'll start to see in advance. But until we start to see some noises coming from the political parties that they have actually agreed on some form of accommodation, then we have to anticipate that there will be additional downward pressure. And we certainly have seen nothing in the way of upward dynamics to signal that demand is returning to dominance in here. The S&P has dropped below 1400. It's dropped below the 200-day moving average. It's in the middle of the underlying, what had been an underlying trading range. And if it breaks down from this trading range, then it's going to signify some considerable trend deterioration. And then it is worth taking a step back and looking at the last 10 years, because the S&P has been largely range-bound for a decade. And over that decade, we've characterized it, and in fact it's 12 years, we've characterized it as a generational-long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And the fact that this has happened in an environment where government bond yields have been trending lower, and in fact have accelerated lower in the last few years, has put us in a position that hasn't been seen since the late 1950s, and that is that Wall Street now yields more than US Treasuries. And whereas that was considered to be the norm prior to the late 1950s, because equities were deemed to require an additional risk premium because of the volatility they represented in the eyes of most people, it is now the corporate sector which is better capitalized. And whereas the government bond sector has governments going out there and borrowing as much as they possibly can, and central banks going out and buying up as much paper as they can, and the balance sheets of various central banks expanding at an incredible rate, and people losing faith in the ability of governments not only to manage the fiat currencies, but to hold on to their savings, because with negative real interest rates, savings are being sacrificed. And people that are coming up towards retirement are looking at their savings deteriorating. And it's helping to bolster demand for gold. And I'll speak more with that, about that in a moment. But when we contrast governments with corporates, one have strong balance sheets, and that's corporates. Governments are in an increasingly more indebted situation and are facing challenges in how they're going to reduce that debt burden. And then we look at exactly what is happening. And governments are massively increasing the supply of their paper. And they're forcing down yields, and they're manipulating that market. And corporates are taking advantage, and they're locking in the lowest cost of capital they've seen in a generation, and they're optimizing their balance sheet, because what they're doing is borrowing more money and buying back their own debt. So that we're seeing that an increasing number of large companies are embarking on ambitious buyback programs, and their shares are turning into collector's items. And when a company like Siemens, which yields about 4%, pays out about 2.36% on its 7- and 8-year bonds, it makes sense that they would issue more debt and buy back their shares. And that type of balance sheet optimization is evident right across the corporate sector. So we're seeing that the supply of bonds is increasing and the supply of equities is actually contracting. And whereas the S&P has been largely range-bound for 12 years, and it has recently been up at the upper side of that range, and is currently in a corrective phase, we've seen that a large number of companies have completed 12 and 13-year ranges in the last year, and they've extended their advances. And whereas they are now in a process of mean reversion, that base formation completion raises the very real possibility that they're in new secular bull markets. And that would suggest that rather than PE ratio contraction, they're in a PE ratio expansion phase. And that would suggest that their dividend yields are going to contract. And if they do pull back additionally here, then they're going to represent phenomenal buying opportunities. Because if they are in new secular bull markets, they could easily come back and test the upper side of their ranges. And that's where one would expect them to begin to find support. And it is those companies that are more leveraged to global growth than domestic growth. And they've been leading for the last 3 and 4 years. And they've been the ones that are most sensitive to the really big bull market that is going on out there. And that is the rise of the global middle class. And literally 1 billion new consumers in the next 20 years. And that means that the per capita consumption of everything, from food to commodities to services to travel, healthcare, and banking, will continue to advance. And the globally oriented companies that have the experience, knowledge, and capital to tap those markets are going to do extraordinarily well. Whereas governments have been buying their debt and they're manipulating the market. And there's a perception that this is a riskless market. And people refer to it as a safe haven. And it's a safe haven from what exactly? It's certainly a momentum trade. But yields are at incredibly low levels. And what happens if growth starts to return in a meaningful way? Because The velocity of money has been trending lower not only in the US but across the G7 for the last decade. And it means that the bull markets that we've had between 2003 and 2007 and 2008-09 and now have been completely liquidity fueled. And that is one of the reasons that gold has done so well, because it's the ultimate money, and it represents an asset class that can't simply be printed into existence, and it defies the dividend discount model of valuation because it's nobody's liability. And in an environment where the thing that people are really worried about is the integrity of their savings, both from an inflationary standpoint and from the diminution of the value of their currencies, then it represents real value and real money. And it is for that reason that we've characterized gold as being remonetized in the eyes of investors. And it is being aided by the fact that ore qualities have been declining and that the supply of additional gold into the system has been declining at exactly the same time that demand has been advancing. Now, there is a caveat with gold, and it is that unlike something like oil, all the gold that has ever been mined still exists in one form or another. And that means that all of the investment demand for gold will turn into supply eventually. And when that happens, we'll be at the top of the market. But we're not there yet. And particularly not so because government bond yields are still at ridiculously low levels. And we're still in a negative real yield environment. And that's a phenomenal tailwind for an asset class that has no yield. Because in a real yield environment of -1 or -1.5, then that reflects to almost a positive yield for gold because it holds its value. And gold has been prone to these lengthy consolidations. And these lengthy consolidations have tended to go through phases of distribution followed by accumulation, which gives way to new highs. And we transitioned from the distribution phase to the accumulation phase of this more than year-long consolidation for gold about 3 or 4 months ago. And the fact that gold rallied so emphatically this week from the region of the 200-day moving average is very heartening indeed. And it bolsters the accumulation phase hypothesis even further. And it would suggest that it is now only a matter of time, not an if but a when, gold actually moves on to new high ground. And that represents a powerful bull market. And it's unlikely to run into any real kind of trouble until interest rates start to rise. And if interest rates start to rise, it's likely to be because growth returns to a more sustainable footing, independent of the supports from liquidity provision. And if that starts to happen, then governments will have no choice but to draw down or to take out some of the additional money supply that they've put into the market. And if that happens, yields will rise. And that's when gold will have a competitor. Because if yields on government bonds rise to a position where they represent competition to gold, then they'll start to attract demand away from the gold market. It was higher interest rates killed off the last major bull market in gold, and it's likely to be the same on this occasion. But because we're in an incredibly low yield environment, then this is still a highly favorable environment for gold, and we are most likely to see gold pushing on to new all-time highs next year, but if we're lucky, we may even see it in the latter couple of weeks of this year. So if we distill all of that down, government bonds represent the last great bubble that has yet to pop, and gold represents a maturing bull market which has been going on for a decade and has significant room to appreciate further and could eventually end in a mania. And it is high-quality equities, and particularly those that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, that represent a new bull market and something where people are underinvested and where the majority of investors, particularly retail investors, have been selling their equity funds to buy bonds. They're likely to get burned, and burned very badly indeed, when the market eventually turns. Whereas equities are considered volatile, and the fact that governance has deteriorated so extremely in the last decade, and that high-frequency traders account for an increasing amount of volume and exhibit a much greater bearing on the wider market, is not helping confidence in the equities. But that will change eventually. And what we're seeing right now is a corrective phase, which is going to produce some phenomenal entry opportunities in some of the investments that we like best. But in the meantime, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside, and we have to continue to do that until we see clear upward dynamics. And if we see them coming in across a whole range of assets at the same time, then that will be an additional signal that we're coming close to at least a short-term, potentially medium-term low. And when we look at currencies, the US dollar has been basing against the euro for the last 4 years, and it continues to rally from the lower side, and it's about mid-range right now, and it's continuing to push up. But Asian currencies are doing even better. So even in an environment where we've had a dollar rally against the euro and against a number of other developed market currencies, Asian currencies have been even stronger. And as long as that remains the case, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to Asian currencies outperforming. And in realistic terms, they should outperform, because it is there that governments are not overly indebted, and where fiscal responsibility has been adopted and held to for at least the last 15 years. And it is for that reason that we're seeing that it is the engine of global GDP growth. So the dollar does look like it is going to get stronger from here. The yen, which has firmed up in the last week because of safe haven buying, is also approaching a pivotal area, because the governor of the Bank of Japan, or the president of the Bank of Japan, is going to be replaced in the first quarter of next year. And the strong likelihood is that he is going to be replaced by someone who is pro-stimulus and pro-weakening the yen. And clear evidence that the yen is into an additional downtrend is when it starts to support a decline below 80 yen against the dollar. And until it does that, we won't have clear evidence that the yen is weakening beyond the short term. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.